Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Televangelist, preacher, Pat Robertson, thanks for being here on the Gary Hour.
The airways in America are filled with people talking about Jesus. Overseas, the same thing.
Trust me, I know. Jesus is everywhere, especially in the holiday season. But is it all right for me to just be a human?
I don't see it. I think it's a very dangerous premise.
But I just want to be a regular human. And Sundays, I can't go to church. That's the time for me to catch up on my Saturday cartoons.
Jesus himself talked about people going to hell.
Wait, I'm going to go to hell for watching cartoons or for not going to church?
The answer is yes.
Yes to the cartoons or for not going to church?
Hell was intended for the devil and his angels.
I didn't know the devil had angels. Hey, hell's starting to sound like an interesting place.
You know, we had one little boy who was in heaven. He said he met some of his, a little sister who had been aborted, and she was in heaven.
Whoa, that's freaky. So you're saying in heaven there's thousands of aborted babies running around?
It's not too clear in the Bible, but I would say the answer is yes.
Ugh, well, heaven's starting to sound a little bit like a hell.
First of all, you need to acknowledge that you're a sinner.
Me?
Secondly, you need to repent of the sin that you have committed.
I don't think so.
And then you need to ask God to forgive you.
Nah.
And having said that, you then say, I will receive Jesus Christ,
nah,
his death on the cross, to pay the price for the sins that I have committed.
I don't think so. I don't really like being judged by my guests. Why don't you look at my ass?
How do you have a black hole?
That's my ass.
Indescribable beauty.
Well, thank you very much. Weirdo.
G, 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 take me away. G, 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 take me today.
Hey there, welcome to episode 18. This episode we talk to Mr. Ben Kissel, K-I-S-S-E-L. He is a comedian. He's also a talking head on Fox and all these shows. He also has four podcasts, yes. He talks a lot in a microphone, which you might be able to tell right off the bat that he's pretty experienced on a microphone. You know, sometimes these conversations, they're like a dance or a duel or like two lead guitar players trading licks. You'll hear our rhythm kind of shift and move. I think it started off a bit of a duel and then it turned into a beautiful dance. We talk about Ben growing up as an evangelical Christian. Yeah. We talk about therapy. We talk about how you get your release. How do you get your mental health? We kind of started talking about politics for almost 10 minutes. And you might notice that I snipped that right out, because this is not a political podcast. You want politics, there's plenty of other places to go. Not that I'm not well informed, because I am, but I don't really want to listen to people talk about it. I enjoy talking about it, but I don't really want to listen to people talk about it. And hopefully you don't either. I've never said this before, but every time I talk on these podcasts, the music behind me is my music. Yes, you can listen to it. It's a band called Setting Sun, and it's on the internet. That's the thing that is attached to your keyboard or on your phone. I believe the internet's probably there. I hope you had good holidays, and I hope you enjoy this episode, conversation with me and Ben Kissel. And if you need headphone volume, you're on number 4 there.
All right. Let me see.
If you need any more or less.
That sounds good to me. Great, yeah.
But cheers.
Cheers, buddy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's get a little.
Oh, right. We're doing it.
Yeah. So I watched your reel on YouTube.
Yes, yes.
It is really impressive.
Thank you so much, Gary. I am Ben Kissel. Yeah, thanks. I my buddy, Dave Kaler, he's a very successful graphic designer. He helped me edit it. And then my other friend, Adam Moritz, helped me finish it off. So check that out. That's a reel that you can find on YouTube. It is my appearances from Kennedy. Of course, Kennedy from early MTV days, early MTV fame. She was one of the original VJs. Fantastic performer and a wonderful woman. I was on her show quite regularly starting in July of this past year, 2015. And then I also appeared on the Greg Gutfeld show a few times. And I love Greg. He's an amazing guy. And I highly recommend reading his book, How to Be Right. It discusses how to argue and win conversations using the magic of humor. And then I also appear regularly on a show on Fox News that airs at 3 o'clock in the morning because that's when I shine. And the name of that show is Red Eye, hosted by my great friend and amazing comic, Tom Shalhoub.
You are getting the plugs in right up top.
I got to do it.
Don't you want to lure them in a little bit?
I got to pay the bills. You know, I got to keep the lights on.
Well, you do look really good. Like on Fox News, you look like you totally belong there.
Yeah. I go to Joseph A. Bank. That's the place where I buy all of my suit jackets and all of my shirts. Joseph A. Bank is one of the greatest stores that's ever existed on the face of the planet, and I highly recommend checking it out. So you can buy 3 suit jackets for $999, and they're great jackets. Although, no, actually, you buy 3, you get 2 for free, and you just buy the 1. It's a whole scam in reality.
I kind of thought it was your shave and haircut that really made it.
Well, when you go into Fox, you know, they have some of the greatest hair and makeup people on the face of the planet. I mean, they've got to make Lou Dobbs look good. And I love Lou Dobbs, and he always does look good. So you go in, you sit down, you get your makeup done, which I love. I love television makeup. You know, it's just, it clears up all the blemishes. Both of my older brothers are gay, so they know about good skin. Mm. And my oldest brother, he came... He called after my first appearance on Red Eye, and he was just ranting and raving with positivity about how great my skin looked. I have done nothing. All they do is cover up my constant hangover.
And a little color adjustment.
A little color adjustment, that's right. Make me look slightly less transparent. I am powder-esque. I am extremely Caucasian. So they do a little color in there. I look really nice. And then the hair team makes, it makes me look like a politician.
Well, I could talk politics with you all day, but this isn't really a political podcast.
We can keep on going with it, though. I like it.
You do. That's what you do. You talk politics, right? That's what you
do. I talk everything. I do a podcast that's true crime related called Last Podcast on the Left. That's all about serial killers, and we're finishing up a 3-parter on Leonard Lake and Charles Ng, and I can talk about anything.
All right. Well, you brought up your 2 gay older brothers. And yeah. I also, you know, I do my research. Mm. And I saw you did a really interesting video for It's Okay to Go.com where you talked about you grew up as an evangelical Christian.
Is that video out?
I saw it last
night. You did? How is it?
It's great.
Is it?
The whole website is really interesting.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I had a great time filming with that project.
Yeah, it's basically a project where people of all religions talk about growing up and how it's okay to get out of it, the organized religion. There's Mormons, there's Brooke Arnold, who was a guest here, is also on it. She was in the ATI cult.
What's the ATI cult?
Alternative Training Institute. It's Bill Gothard. Who those people, the reality show people, the Dugars.
Oh, they grew up okay.
It's really twisted. And the guy's been accused of raping young women. It's really, really twisted.
Yeah.
But I'm very familiar with religion because I grew up with a lot of it. So this interests me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to ask you about, well, first I want to ask you about growing up as an evangelical Christian and the fact that you have two gay older brothers. This is a whole world.
Well, of course, I mean, you know, growing up, we didn't, I didn't have two gay older brothers when I was growing up, right? I mean, obviously they were gay, but they were never, they weren't out at the age of eight.
Are they still evangelical Christians?
No. My oldest brother, okay, so growing up, so the first question.
And can you tell the listeners a little bit about your version of what you grew up, your experience as an evangelical Christian?
Yeah. So, my parents, my father's an immigrant. He's from Germany. He came over here at the age of 18. He met my mother in North Dakota. They started getting involved. There was a huge counterculture movement to the counterculture, which is what evangelical Christianity came from.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a bunch of hippies doing drugs, free love, those sorts of things. The drugs sort of took a turn for the worst. Then you sort of have your Mansons of the world.
Yeah.
And you have, you know, the dark side of the drug movement. Out of that came evangelical Christians.
So it's relatively new, evangelical Christians?
Yeah, it's relatively new. Jimmy Carter was the first president to ever get elected running as an evangelical Christian. My parents both voted for him. And then obviously he did a terrible job. And Ronald Reagan picked up that mantle, and he ran with it, and he was able to form the Christian Coalition.
Are your parents still evangelicals?
Yes.
They are.
So my dad...
Do you speak with them?
Yeah, I talk to them sometimes.
Sometimes?
When my parents got here, they joined a... In North Dakota, they joined a cult, really is what it was. It was called Daystar. Yeah, it's called Daystar. It's still around. They actually...
Not a cell phone company?
It is not a cell phone company.
That's how you recruit people, though. That'd be really smart.
Yeah. Of course, get a good phone plan around any cause.
Then you have just God sending them text messages all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of a fun little bonus perk. Daystar, actually, they just wanted to launch a television network, and they claimed the television network itself was a church, so they claimed they wanted to get tax exemption for it, which the federal government should not be giving to any churches anyway.
I agree with
which was nonsense. So they weren't able to win that. So that's where I was born. I was born into this cult called Daystar. My oldest brother was 6, my middle brother was 4, and I was 2 when we finally left and we went to Illinois. Always very evangelical, finally ended up in Wisconsin. And my parents were very, they wore the religion on the sleeves. The thing about evangelicals is they, obviously, they have to go evangelize, right? So you have to constantly be telling people that...
Constantly recruiting people.
Very, you know, much different, you know, than the Jewish faith, much different than the Mormons, who I believe there's only a couple hundred thousand people that get into the Mormon heaven. So they're just like, get out of here as much as possible.
But your parents weren't born into it, huh?
You don't have to be. No. Evangelicals, I mean, very few. I'm one of the first generations of kids to be born into evangelicalism. Uh-huh. I mean, it's not, I mean, you know, you have like Billy Graham and things like that, but this is almost more extreme than all that. So
it's so extreme, because it's one thing to be born into and be brainwashed from a young age, but to be a grown adult and to choose to live that way.
Well, I mean, that happens all the time. I mean, look at Scientology or any religion, any religion. I mean, it's all the same thing. Obviously, you know, religions are surrounded by society, you know, by a societal construct. That's what you like, and then of course the religion is the unifier. Yeah, the unifying factor between the friendships and the society.
So you see the good things. You see the virtues of it.
I don't see any. If I had to say the virtues of evangelicalism, You know, when you grow up evangelical, you do have to question life and death issues at a very, very young age. My parents were extremely pro-life, and they were very involved in that movement. So I know about abortion left. I know I've known about what abortion is, what it looks like, and those things since I was like 3 years old. You know, I told the story, and I'm not sure if she cut it out or kept it on the video that you saw about going to an abortion rally when I was 6 years old.
It's not on
in Washington, D.C. I tell the story on stage. My parents would caravan with these people who would have huge pictures of dead babies on the sides of their minivans and their station wagons and things like that. It's a tactic that a lot of pro-life people use to show what abortion looks like. Believe it or not, it's not pretty. Not that a lot of people thought that it was in the first place. So the one good thing about being evangelical in hindsight is it does make you ask and try to answer philosophical questions regarding life and death at a young age, at an age where most kids are, too busy being preoccupied with playing with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or having a drone now. I think kids like drones now.
Much like any philosophy would. You know, you don't really need an organized religion to discuss philosophy.
You don't. But, I mean, I would say my parents were really sweet in a lot of ways. My mother was a foster mom, so we took in foster care kids since starting when I was 12. I have a 22-year-old foster brother now. So they did... They were not hypocritical. They were not hypocritical when it came to their staunch pro-lifeness. A lot of pro-lifers are against abortion and they have their door shut when it comes to people in need. So you can't be hypocritical if you are going to be, and I always say this, I'm a pro-choice person. If you are pro-life, that's okay. There are reasons behind that, but you must have an open door policy then.
Right. Okay. So there against abortion.
Yeah.
But how do they feel about birth control? Is that
They don't go too crazy with that. My parents have never been they never went down the road of just like, if you masturbate, that's a genocide on your chest. They never did that. You know, and my dad, they weren't like, you know, this, I had a sex talk with my father and it was just like, wear a condom. And I'm like, okay. No one was having sex with me anyway. You know, I was morbidly obese, for crying out loud. I was in high school. So when it comes to that,
losing the weight.
Thank you so much. When it comes to that, they were not extreme. I think it's also because they had three boys. So I don't know how they would have been with a girl.
Right.
Right. So I don't know. But as far as it goes, they were not anti-science. I mean, my dad's family was very, very successful. Mm-hmm. And my mom, you know, her parents were bright in their own right. My grandmother, in North Dakota got a master's degree when she was, I believe, like 28. So this is like the 1950s or whatever. My parents rebelled by going to religion.
They rebelled from your grandparents.
Both of my grandparents, my parents rebelled by going this conservative religious route.
Are you rebelling by going the non-religious
route? No, I don't rebel. No, I mean, I'm not even non-religious. No, I'm not rebelling from my parents. I'm way over that. I didn't even have to really rebel from my parents because by the time I was in high school, they were so exhausted from being parents, I could pretty much do whatever I wanted to do.
Three boys will exhaust a person. My mom has three boys.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know how they do it. Specifically my middle brother. My oldest brother is interesting. I mentioned earlier, you know, them not being out, but, you know, Eric used to really, he would always like my oldest brother. He was really into RuPaul and Delight. And so I always just thought this was very normal. I tell
would you
a story
say that that's
on
a
stage.
Red gay flag?
I would think so. Uh-huh. You know, for a boy in Wisconsin who is 6'11", to love RuPaul, that is abnormal. Yeah. Our town was 23,000 people. I mean,
6'11"?
Yeah, he's 6'11".
Yikes.
But at no point did I think that this was something that was out of the ordinary. It just was what it was. Although I know people in the town, you know, they would sort of mock the us a little bit and things like that because they knew, I mean, everyone sort of knew something was weird, but I mean, for me, it was just totally normal. I tell a story of a sexual situation that I had thinking of RuPaul because my brother had bought a poster of her and put it on his wall, and I thought she was very attractive. And I was not aware of the penis or the balls.
Well, when you're that tall, how do you know if people are staring at you because you're gay or because you're just freakishly tall?
Yeah, I mean, people, you know, that's the thing. I had terrible, crippling social anxiety disorder growing up, and being 6'7 certainly didn't help that. I was 5'10 in eighth grade, and then by the end of my freshman year of high school, I was 6'7. So.
See, I would think being tall would be, you know, feeling strong and superior and powerful.
No, when you're 13. It's a nightmare.
You just, because when you're 13, you just want to be like everyone else.
Yeah, you want to be like everyone else, and you don't. I mean, I was very shy. It's very shy.
Now you're realizing, this is tall thing is pretty good.
It's okay in your mid 30s, getting on mid 30s, I guess. Not quite mid 30s.
The ladies like the tall guys.
Some of them do, some of them don't. You know, it's a crapshoot. Everyone likes something in somebody. But my middle brother, Chris, he was much more flamboyant. Mm-hmm. And much more outgoing. So,
in the evangelical religion, homosexuality is a sin, right?
Oh my God, it's one of the worst. It's like, one of the worst things you can do.
It's like peeing on God, basically.
Oh yeah, and God just loving every second of it. It is bad. Yeah, you know, I mean, my church.
Do you believe in God? Before I offend you.
Oh no, I do not.
You don't. No, you're an atheist.
No, I'm just an agnostic. I don't even think about these things. I mean, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I really do not care.
But you
about
must
what
care
happens.
If your parents are evangelicals.
I mean, my parents believe in God, obviously. That's their thing. And whatever I'm of the mind, whatever you have to do to get through life, don't try to hurt anybody. Just try to be loving as possible. Mm-hmm. If you have to be religious, then be religious. If you want to be atheist, then be atheist. Do whatever you have to do in order to make this time that we have here slightly more palatable, because it's not easy.
I'm so glad we're talking about this, because I'm dealing with this issue right now because my father is very religious. He's a Christian Scientist.
Okay.
And yeah. I have a long-term girlfriend, and we can't stay in the same room in his house.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had a girlfriend where we couldn't stay in the same room either. Her parents were hardcore Catholic. I don't know. That's fine.
Is that not a moral judgment on someone else, though?
I mean, it is what it is. I mean, how often are you hanging out at your dad's house, you know? So I don't know. I mean, if you're in somebody's home, I guess you have to respect their wishes. And I get the, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Whatever.
Is it not a little weird and creepy that a parent would be even thinking about what's going on behind those doors?
Yeah, I mean, it's. But that's the religion. I mean, you know, it's very personal to these people. So, I mean, I think most likely your father believes that he is doing what is best for you. And saving you from getting smited by the Lord. So I don't know, but anyway, I mean, that can be a fight that you have with your dad. But at the same time, I don't think that's certainly not a deal breaker.
This is my problem with religious people, though, because what he's doing, and many others as well, not to single him out, but they are putting their religious beliefs before the love of their children.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you on that. And I'll tell you a perfect example of that really quickly, going back to what I was saying about my brother, though, Chris. When he was 16, he went over to Milan, Italy to model. He was much more outgoing about his sexuality. Everyone knew, which left me, my oldest brother had gone off to college, then Chris was in Milan, Italy modeling. I was 6'7" and a freshman in high school. I got bullied relentlessly. It was an absolute nightmare. They're all a bunch of janitors.
Had your middle brother come out at this point?
Well, he never came out, but he never wasn't out. Everyone kind of knew, but he still had sex with chicks. He was a very cool guy. He was a cool kid. He was, you know, very handsome.
But what did your parents think?
Well, I'll get to this now.
Must have been like a big problem for them. How do they resolve this? They have got their strong religious beliefs, then they've got the love for their children.
Okay, so like you were saying earlier, with people putting dogma before family, my oldest, or Chris, got married. Two summers ago. Good Lord. Mm-hmm. And my parents didn't go. My parents refused to go to the wedding. It was a beautiful ceremony.
Out of protest?
Out of protest. It was a beautiful ceremony at the Brooklyn Botanical Gardens. Very traditional. I mean, as traditional as any wedding I've been to. Mm-hmm. And my parents didn't go. And that definitely caused a rift, because that's very mean-spirited, and it's a very important day, a person's wedding.
Yeah, they're saying they don't respect his choices, his lifestyle.
Right. Right. So that's an issue. And of course, if I would ever get married, I have yet to meet a woman. But if I would ever get married, I think that would be something that I would have to have a conversation with my brothers about and with myself internally if I would want them to go to my wedding, because I do have a strong disdain for people who put fantasy over family. And I think that that is certainly the case when it comes to religion. It is a fantasy. It is the definition of fantasy. And unfortunately, it's a powerful fantasy that has strong political ability. Mm-hmm. So I do understand being upset with religious parents but on the other end of that, I went to Uruguay to visit my grandmother, and they're completely secular, and they're very confused about my father's choice in religion, because when you do become it was a cult, Daystar, when they first began. So parents were just thoroughly, they are still to this day, I mean, she's 93 years old, just thoroughly confused about why the religion grabbed them so hard.
And is that your dad's mom?
That's my dad's mom. Yeah.
Okay,
my dad's,
yeah. How did that affect their relationship?
It's not good. I mean, you put
dogma ahead of your relationships.
Yeah. Ahead of flesh and blood.
Yeah.
And so it's not good. And it's confusing because you wonder, how can someone believe such nonsense? I mean, what is it? Transubstantiation? No, it's when the blood turns into the wine, turns into blood, and the body turns in the bread turns into
substantiation.
Yeah, there it is. I can never remember that. No, it's confusing. It's confusing. Yeah. And my Oma was very.
But isn't it all about love? And what is so loving about judging others and saying that this?
I don't think religion is all about love.
Uh huh. What is it about? What draws people to it?
Well, I think there is a need for self-worth, a desire to calm there is a certain amount of as soon as you're born, you're immediately kind of struck with this what's the right word,
like purpose. What
no,
is
no,
my
no.
purpose?
I'm talking it's a fear of death. As soon as you're born, as soon as you have a mind that can think, I mean, I remember thinking about death ever since one of my first thoughts was like, what is this?
Like mortality?
Mortality. And it is it's a way to calm, not the fear, the uncertainty of death.
That's
what it is.
Yeah. Why are people so scared of the uncertainty? And why do people, it's the same reason why our brain needs to put everything in boxes.
Right.
That person is this way. That person is this way. You see them, then you judge them, you put them in a box.
Right.
What is so hard about people being like, I don't know. Maybe I'll know later in life. I don't need to know now.
Not knowing is really difficult to admit and to feel. I mean, not knowing is scary. I personally, I have no fear of death. I don't know if I've really ever had a fear of death. I embrace the warm hand of death. Come and take me whenever you want. Mm-hmm. I really don't care. But at the same time, I believe in energy. I believe that, what is life? You know, what are we? So this notion that you go into a tangible heaven or a tangible hell and you have extremely human-like creatures being God. Even the fact that they put a gender on God is just so stupid.
Yeah.
It just shows such a lack of creativity.
Well, do they, or is it Father, Mother, God?
Well, I mean, even so. I mean, yeah, whatever.
Right. Male, female.
Yeah, whatever it is. That's why, whatever. Going back to dogma, like God was Alanis Morissette, and everyone was just like, I can't believe it, but I'm still just like, oh, whatever.
Well, I'm curious how you work this out, because you still have a relationship with your parents, right? Not so much.
I talked to my parents. Well, my childhood was an interesting one. It was a little tumultuous at times, and it was abnormal. It was very abnormal. So with the foster kids, and then with my my dad was very stressed out a lot. He was a truck driver, so he would work like 70, 80 hours a week, and then he had a bunch of shithead kids to come home to. So I sympathize now as I get older with the amount of work that he was doing and then how difficult it is to raise a family.
But that was his choice. You didn't decide, say, hey, Dad, I want to be born. He was like, hey, I'm going to give birth to Ben.
Yeah, of course. And they were always very happy about that.
Kids always do that. They put it on themselves. But no way. I didn't choose to be here. That was their choice.
Right, but you do have to sympathize a little bit as well. I mean, no one at the same time, it was my choice to, you know, go to school and, you know, sit on some kid or something. I don't know what I was doing. I'd do some prank or something like that.
Was it our choice? Or were we just like, well, boy, we're going to have to support ourselves later in life. We better figure this out.
I was a pretty bad kid in high school. I was voted class clown, rowdiest, and loudest. And I missed class rebel by one vote. And I'm still super pissed off at Tyler. This kid named Tyler got it.
That's perfect.
He's a good kid,
though. That'll keep you a rebel.
Yeah.
If you would have won class rebel, you'd have been like, all right, I did that rebel thing.
I did drive my parents absolutely nuts. I was very close to getting kicked out of high school many times. I got to go to Catholic school because I went to a super evangelical school, and then my parents let me go to Catholic school. It was the most liberal choice they would have made. They allowed themselves to make. And my friend Jared and I were hellraisers. We stole thousands of dollars worth of cigarettes, and we would mostly just give them away to people, and sometimes sell them if I felt smart that day. Jared ended up getting kicked out, and I barely graduated.
I was going to say, oh, you're entrepreneurs, but you were giving them away.
So yeah, we were just thieves.
You're just like Robin Hoods that wanted people to die of cancer.
Well, this was the mid-90s now, so it was before cameras were everywhere. I mean,
right,
we really didn't do anything violent. We would just steal a lot of cigarettes, and this was when they had cigarettes in front of the counter.
Yeah.
Before everything was, you know, they would just have aisles full of snuff and tobacco that was just like, buy the candy. So it was a much easier time to...
Right by the cigarette candy.
Yeah. Real cigarettes or fake cigarettes, whichever one you wanted. And we wanted the real ones,
well,
that's for sure.
I'm glad we're having this conversation now because Christmas is three days away.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are going home to their families, and I'm dealing with this issue too. Now, are you going to go see your parents for Christmas?
No, I don't see my parents too often. So I'm not going to see them for Christmas this year.
Do they want you to come back for Christmas?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I feel as if they're fine. I think they're fine. So I talk to my parents maybe once or twice a year or so. So, you know, we don't have a very close relationship, but I have a lot of respect for them, and they're very proud of me. You know, they watch me on TV and stuff like that. So they're proud of me in that way. But at the end of the day, there isn't too much to discuss, you know, because the only things they want to discuss are our religion, or the only things they have any sort of intelligence for is religion, and they are very intelligent. If I was you know, someone who was a theologian or someone who was interested in Christianity, I'm sure they would be able to engage in a fascinating conversation. I know they're very popular. They go to a Haitian church in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. That's how evangelical they are. They went around to all these different churches in Fort Lauderdale, and they finally settled on the Haitians.
Uh-huh.
And the Haitians, they very anti-gay. Haiti is one of the worst places you can go for being gay.
Really?
You get murdered, you get tired. They fill a rubber tire up with gasoline, throw it around people's necks, and light it aflame. You know, it's disgusting. But that's the church my parents go to. So I don't really speak to them too much, but they're very good people.
So let me ask you, you speak to them once or twice a year, you said?
Well, maybe a little bit more, maybe like three or four times a year.
Okay, so who calls who, and what is the conversation? Like, what, I mean, when you barely
talk. Oh, it's very nice. Well, you know, it's difficult because it's pretty, it's just base. It's base stuff. It's weather related.
So why even talk just to be like, all right, we're cool with each other, but
yeah,
we
you know, just to
like
just
each other.
Just to, no, we do like each other. That's the thing. I really do like them.
If we
you
love
meet
each
my
other,
parents,
but we don't.
If you
like
would
each
meet
other.
My parents, you would think my father was one of the most charming people you've ever met.
Yes, religious people often do that. And I was saying this before in another conversation. Like Southern people too, they're really kind and nice and great hosters and.
Mm-hmm.
But they're often very close-minded and judgmental as well.
Well, once you get underneath the artifice, once you scratch the surface and you really start to see where their philosophies lie, then, you know, once you realize they voted for Rick Santorum, things start to go a little bit south. But at the same time, my parents have always welcomed both of my older brother, my brother's husband now, and my oldest brother's boyfriend or fiance.
They
welcome them into their home constantly. So it's very confusing. It's a very confusing situation.
So they must be a little torn because they've had to compromise their religious beliefs.
No, that's not a compromise. I mean, the whole point, the evangelicals are always love the sinner, hate the sin, which is one of my... it's such a cliche statement, and it drives me insane. But anyway, in the definition of it is you love the person, but you just disagree with every single thing that they believe in and everything that they are. So it's confusing, which is why childhood was a bit
It's a bit difficult. Navigate.
It's a lot to navigate because what it's such an abstract thought, because it's also very demeaning at the same time to the person who you're being nice to, like you were saying earlier with the Southerns.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I don't think a lot of religious people don't get is how it's demeaning. You know, when you're judging someone and saying, oh, well, you can't sleep in this room, even though that's what you normally do. Or if you have to change your normal behavior to fit us, that's a judgment. And it's demeaning.
Yeah, you know, and at the same time, it is they feel as if it's demeaning to them when they don't want to make a gay wedding cake and the federal government goes in and tells them that that's illegal and you have to make a gay cake, you have to make a cake for a gay wedding. So, you know, everyone feels as if the other side is demeaning towards them. So I think what my strategy has always been and always will be to just try to bridge the gap and to really just kind of relax, let people do what they want to do, regardless if it agree, if you agree with it or not. Like for, I am personally at this point, I'm 34 years old. If I got a woman pregnant, I would prefer to have the kid. Okay, but I'm also pro-choice.
What if she was?
And if she didn't want to, then that's her decision.
Right.
I don't own a gun, but I'm okay with people owning guns.
Right.
You don't seem
like a guy who would impose your beliefs on
anybody. My personal beliefs aren't right for everybody. Right. I don't really need a gun because I'm a 6'7" guy who I can walk down any alley in New York City and feel relatively safe. You know, my ex-girlfriend's 5'1". You know, when we were going through, like we would walk and she'd be like, "You're going to go down this road?" And be like, "Yeah, what? I don't even think about the idea of not going."
That's not your reality.
You know, but the idea of her having a gun, I think that's wonderful. Why isn't, you know, a 90-pound woman have a gun? Sure, I think that's wonderful. I've never personally had a feeling of being so unsafe that has prompted me to have a gun. But so I understand that my personal philosophies, the things that work for me, don't work for everybody else. And so you have the situations where you know, Christians feel under attack. You know, people who are secular feel under attack.
But
of course, you have that situation where you had that Kim chick over there denying the gay marriage licenses.
Right. Kim Davis. Yeah.
Kim Davis, because she's a ward of the state. She is a mouthpiece of the state. The state has passed, gay marriage is legal. So that's an entirely different story.
She's just not doing her job.
She's not doing her job. Yeah. Right. When you are representing the state, you have to go with what state law and federal law, well, state law specifically.
But aren't you also kind of drawing a false equivalency? Because it's one thing to have your beliefs, and it's another thing to have your beliefs that impose on other people's beliefs.
Well, right, which is why Kim Davis was wrong.
Right, well, that's really wrong, because she was, you know, elected. Yeah. She just wasn't doing her job.
Right.
But the person that doesn't want their gay children in their home...
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, that's...
I disagree with you being gay,
yeah,
but you can't come in our home even though this is the home you grew up in.
Yeah, I mean, those people are terrible. That's a terrible thing to do.
So how do your parents kind of rationalize this with themselves?
I think it is the hate the sinner. Hate the sin, love the sinner. That's the philosophy.
Okay, now what if he wanted to sleep in the same room with his boyfriend?
My parents don't care about that stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
They don't be care. Okay.
Well, they only have a 2-bedroom apartment. So that doesn't hurt. I don't come from a lot of money. So we never... Well, we had a nice... We had a pretty nice house growing up, actually. But then my parents are just in a 2-bedroom apartment now in Fort Lauderdale. So if I had a girlfriend and we went to stay, there's nowhere else to go.
Well, there's another bedroom, right?
Yeah, but they don't have a problem, you know. With my brother, well, they stay in a hotel usually, but if they would stay over, there would not be a problem with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. See, it's that kind of that's where the false equivalencies get thrown a lot.
Yeah, it's my parents are very bizarre though, so it's tough to say.
Do you see a lot of hypocrisies in their beliefs?
I mean, anytime somebody has religion is plays such a huge role in somebody's life, there's going to be hypocrisies. But there's hypocrisies with everybody. You have Bill Maher, the self-proclaimed atheist, making a movie like Religious.
Mm-hmm.
The only religion he doesn't make fun of is Judaism, ironically enough. And he's attacking Christian truck drivers. Okay, so these truck drivers are former meth addicts.
Well, he's attacking
spousal abusers. Maybe religion is good for them. Bill Maher is, right. You know, and then of course, you know, his anti Muslim sentiment, which is just people make fun of Donald Trump, or they criticize Trump for saying anti-Muslim things, which Hillary Clinton, by the way, is the exact same policy that Trump has. She just says it's slightly more articulate because you know, she's playing to a different constituency.
That's why it's more gangsta, because you keep your cards close to your chest.
Trump has he's got some Trump cards in there, there is obviously hypocrisy anytime you make a philosophy the cornerstone of your political career, of your professional life. If you're a celebrity and you, you know, like Bill Maher, Bill Maher is a branded atheist, left liberal, even though the Liberal Party has moved away from him, the left has moved away from him. I actually think he's more conservative sounding now
in
a lot of ways. But I think that disables you political fluidity of thought and fluidity of thought when it comes to life. When it comes to your every time, every day you learn something new, every night you go to sleep somebody different. And so when you pigeonhole yourself, or, you know, tie the noose around your neck and force yourself into one specific, you know, philosophy, and literally if Bill Maher would come out as a conservative, he would lose his entire fan base. And, you know, Jon Stewart in the same way. So
yeah,
that, I think anytime that can be dangerous, and then it leads the door wide open for hypocrisy, because you're not allowed to play to see what the play is and to call an audible.
Well, you tapped on something interesting, that you're born a different person the next day, and we're constantly evolving. That's how I like to think of the whole Jesus story, reincarnation. You know, he's born, he came back to life. I like to
zombie Jesus.
I feel like I'm, you know, constantly evolving, and you can be born again in your own life.
Yeah.
And the Bible is full of metaphor. You know, if you read the beginning of the Bible, people live to 400 years old. How do you explain that? Oh, it's just metaphor. Anything that doesn't really work out factually is metaphor. You know, and then, oh, but it's, he really did come back to life. No one comes back to life. We've never seen anyone come back to life. Right. Obviously, it's a metaphor.
Well, and this is what sort of the baptism, you know, this is what baptism is in the Christian faith and everything like that. You know, you go in, I was baptized in, what was it, Jordan Park? I forget Iverson Park or something
like that. In the water and all
that? Yeah, and so I was so fat, and I was wearing a white t-shirt, and I got dumped underneath. And my first thoughts were just like, I can't believe, like, everyone's laughing at me. Yeah. My tits were all out. You know, it was a wet t-shirt contest that I didn't sign up for. So when I was reborn embarrassed, I guess. Baptized until I was embarrassed.
Yeah, so your parents at some point realized that they have two gay kids on their hand.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't. I mean, at that, my oldest brother, he graduated, and he was actually in Campus Crusade for Christ in college.
Oh, wow.
So, and then my middle brother, yeah, I mean, at no point did they really, they didn't have two gay kids on their hands. I mean, this was just the family, so I don't think they really dealt with those issues so much, because both of my older brothers were very independent. My oldest brother was already out of the house, and when he came out, so my brother came out in an email saying that he was going to the gay 90s with his new boyfriend, Dallas.
And that's how he came out?
Yeah, I was like, I guess he's gay. I called Chris, I was like, I guess Eric's gay. And then he was like, oh, of course, you know. Right. He was jealous, he was upset for Eric taking his thunder, you know.
Yeah.
But
how do you know you're not gay?
Well, I mean, I'm not sexually attracted to men. Although I do like this Bailey J. She's a trans porn star, but she never has sex with women. She only has, the whole thing's confusing.
It gets very confusing.
We can't, that's a whole other podcast. Yeah. We can't go there.
So not just to put it on your parents, but I feel like a lot of religious parents, when they're spending Christmas alone, you know, and their children aren't coming home, do you ever, you think they ever just think to themselves, wow, this religion thing has kind of pushed a lot of people away from me?
No, I don't think so, because it's brought them their community. You know, it is, they have a lot of friends, a lot of Haitian friends, mm-hmm.
Isn't that also very telling when you can only be friends with people who agree with you on all these different things?
Yeah, I mean, that's just the way that my dad is, you know,
that's
the way a lot of them are. Most of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? So,
I mean, you're a comedian, you probably have all kinds of friends.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have all kinds of friends.
I never actively sought out diverse friendships. It just happens.
It's just energy.
Yeah.
It's people just, that have the right good energy.
Exactly.
You surround yourself
with. And you do surround yourself with people who have, I mean, you know, everyone surrounds themselves, though, with people who have similar philosophies in a range.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we can't pretend as if, you know, everyone is so unbelievably open-minded. Take a look at a picture with you and your 10 best friends, and I guarantee you, you're going to see a relatively homogeneous, very, you know, yeah. very similar in many, many ways. Age, mostly race, tend to be gender, you know, so, and mostly orientation is probably going to be similar. So everyone does surround themselves with people that are in a range of themselves.
Right. But let's not, again, draw a false equivalency, because there's a lot more diversity.
Much more diversity. Yeah. I'm just saying, you know, I mean, Christians are, and all religious people, you know, all religious people, they tend to obviously be attracted to a smaller group of people who have more hardened beliefs.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how I've been to a church where they had packets. I don't think this is even legal, but how to vote, who to vote for. It's all very black legal. And white. That merger of church and state.
I don't know if it is actually legal, but that's what they do. That is what they do. Yeah.
Yeah. They tell their church constituents who to vote for, how to vote.
They encourage.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. They encourage it. Yeah. That, and then, of course, this can lose them tax exemption if they're found to be a political
organization.
Yeah, and they are, of course. I mean, the affiliations with the political affiliations of the church are, I guarantee you, what an evangelical, you know who an evangelical is voting for. They're voting for Ted Cruz, they're voting for Mike Huckabee, Rick Santorum, maybe Rubio can get some over to his side. Those are their candidates this year. They have three candidates this year, and you know, maybe some of them will allow their racism to trump their religion and they vote for Donald.
So you seem to...
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
To kind of work this out, I mean, when you have parents that don't really accept you for who you are.
No, they do. They accept you. It's not about that. It's not about you.
Uh-huh.
It's religion.
It's about them.
Yeah, it's not about you.
Have you ever?
It's not about them. It's not about their parents. It's not about their kids. It's about their religion. I mean, my parents believe in a living God. Mm-hmm. They believe that God is, you know, the neighbor next door, you know, knocking on the door asking for sugar when he needs, you know, to make an impromptu birthday cake. I mean, that's what my parents believe. So they don't, it's not about not loving your kids or, you know, disconnecting from your parents. It's about having a relationship with God,
and that's
which is bigger than everything.
It's more important than your blood relationship.
Yeah, totally.
So what do you mean by a living God? Their God lives next door and he's always out of sugar?
Apparently.
I'll take one of those. What do you mean by a living God? Like he's everywhere, he's an omnipotent God?
That's what evangelicals believe, that yes, God is alive
everywhere,
alive and well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but he's not a person.
They definitely visualize him as a person. You know, there's a reason that Muslims don't allow you to draw Muhammad, which I actually think is interesting, because there is something a little bit more. I understand it from the perspective of each person. I am no theologian, so I might be completely off, but assuming just what I personally think, you can visualize whatever image you want to have for Muhammad, right? Like, so it's very personal.
Oh, that's why they don't want you to draw.
I don't know. I don't know this at all. I'm just saying this is possible.
That's kind of cool, though.
Which would make sense to me, right? Because, but then you have Christians, when you think of Jesus, as a matter of fact, he looks a lot like you do, Gary.
Yes.
You might be the second coming of Christ.
Oh, I get told that when I let my facial hair grow out. Yes.
Right.
Totally.
So we have an image of Jesus, right. You know, so...
we have an obviously false image of Jesus because he does not
probably look like LeBron James. I mean, who the hell knows what, you know, I mean, if he was ever even a real person, he's,
right.
What do you call it?
A myth.
No, an amalgamation.
I hate an amalgamation of characters.
Yeah,
and
this is most likely.
Well, Christmas in and of itself is an amalgamation of traditions.
Yes.
You know, it's the winter solstice. It was a pagan ritual. People going caroling door to door came from a bunch of drunk people trying to get people to give them more booze.
Right.
You know, putting lights up comes from, you know, you used to light candles and be like, ward off the darkness. We're approaching winter. We want more light for the crops.
Makes a lot of sense.
No one knows when Jesus was born.
They say he was born in February or something, but it's all nonsense. Anyway, not to be on the religion thing too much, but my parents believe in a living God that is represents himself in human form, I'm sure, in their minds. That's how they would think of him, and it is what it is, and it's going to trump all family and all blood.
Well, what are you going to do this Christmas? I mean, why do you not want to go and see your parents?
I mean, I have to work, so that's fine, I don't know. I'm going to hang out. I'm actually house-sitting for friends of mine, so I'm going to go and take care of their dogs.
Do you believe the world would be better without organized religion?
It's tough to say because, you know, people talk about, you know, I have a lot of friends, I love politics, and people are just like, why do we need a government? Everyone should just like do everything on their own. And, oof. But what happens, humans form government. I mean, you look at Occupy Wall Street, for example, you know, which was not an impromptu event. I mean, these things are organized by the SEIU. These things are organized by huge, huge institutions of the left. And immediately after, you know, 4 or 5 days, governments start to form, pockets start to form.
Right.
You know, people of similar philosophies, like we were mentioning earlier, come together and they form unions and they form coalitions. So this whole idea that the world might be better without religion, it is just another form. I mean, in the Middle East, religion is politics.
Right.
You know, so these things are very intertwined. The U.S., I mean, people do not give the United States enough credit. The separation of church and state at its time was revolutionary. It was insane.
Yeah.
You know, like people were, it was so bold. I mean, a bunch of Freemasons came over here and just denounced religion in government. I mean, obviously it sneaks its way through, but it is not. It's not the figurehead of government. It's not the cornerstone of our government. I mean, the Constitution is our Bible, which is insane. I mean, so would the world be better without religion? It doesn't even matter because religion is going to happen. Whatever that religion is, the next religion, you know, with singularity and aliens and, you know,
Scientology.
You know, I mean, all of these things are, if you look at it from the, from a religious perspective, they're religious. If you look at it from a political perspective, it's political. So people who are religious see everything through a religious lens.
Right.
So that's why they see the secular. That's why they go to Starbucks and deduce that there's a war on Christmas because there isn't a stupid pagan tree on the cup. I mean, so they see everything in a different way.
Right.
And people who like politics, if you're in business, you go to a Starbucks and maybe you marvel at the productivity.
Right.
Or you see, oh, like that cup is five. You look through.
Or if you're a graphic designer, you're like, oh, look at this great packaging.
Yeah, exactly. The simplicity of the packaging or the you know, outlandishness of it. So you look through things, you look at as a comedian, you look at life with a different lens.
Yeah.
You know, you try to find the humor in things. You don't let maybe see the tragedy outright. You try to find the humor in the tragedy.
But again, let's not draw false equivalency because even though there might be people seeing things through these different lenses, we're not judging or condemning anybody. We're saying this.
Oh, I mean,
this
you can't say that
good.
Comedians don't judge or condemn. There's a punchline to every joke, right?
Yeah, that,
I mean, you
that's,
know,
that's
and
true.
That is that does tend to lead to condemnation or judgment. You know, usually a punchline isn't you know, something where the person or the thing that you're mocking comes out looking like a big winner.
But I'm much more apt to let a fundamentalist into my home just for the material. You know, it doesn't bother me. It's not offending my God. I just please come in. I want some material out of this.
Yeah, for a little while, and then I got to get out of here. But
that's true. Yeah, if they're no fun,
there's a lot of them that aren't. You know, I mean, I had a friend in college, my best friend in high school, or one of them. And we were roommates in college, and he went away one weekend, and we were drinking a lot. I mean, I'm a huge proponent of alcohol. It's one of my favorite things. And
now, do you think you're drinking to escape?
Or No.
Why do you drink?
I love to drink.
You just love it.
I've been drinking since I was 12. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that's part of being a Christian. They love to drink a lot, right? From an early age.
No, my parents didn't drink.
They didn't.
No, I don't know what it is. It's always been my favorite drug of choice. I don't take any pills. I don't do anything. But anyway, I'm a pretty outgoing guy. But then again, I will say, if you have a drinking problem, do not do it. And God knows, I take time off,
Yeah, you don't have a problem at all.
There was a podcast Gary and I actually met on, which if it ever comes out, I'm pretty hungover, and then by the end of it, I'm drunk again. So that'll be kind of a good one for the B-sides. I don't think I sounded too bad though. I think I was just very mean, which is possible. But let's see. So we're saying, what are we talking about?
We're talking about false equivalencies, but I'm also kind of amazed at how you've worked this out. Like, you don't seem angry. You seem like you've found some sort of resolve with this whole religious thing. Even though
I don't get angry with anybody for doing, again, like I said earlier, you do what you have to do to get through. I mean, this is not an easy life. Life is very, very hard.
And aren't your parents making it harder for you by just giving you?
I had a very rough childhood, so nothing I will experience in my adult life will be remotely close to what I experienced in my middle school years or my teenage years, which is I'm thankful for to get that done with. I mean, being in the entertainment industry, all it is rejection. It's constant rejection.
Yeah.
Well, like,
yeah.
I don't even care. Like, yeah. Whatever. I can handle anything.
Good for the ego. Good for the humility.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, I'm just not worried about it. Whatever you say about me, at the end of the day, you go into an audition, some casting director doesn't like you. She or he's a casting director. I mean, what a loser. What a boring life that is. Are you kidding me? I mean, it doesn't even matter to me. So,
well, you just got to do what you do and not worry about it. Just try to be the best you.
And try not to be, mean-spirited and things like that. So,
yeah.
That's really pretty much it. And I think, I don't know. I don't demonize the religious people. I mean, quite honestly, nothing really aggravates me more than evangelical atheists.
Well, you said something at the beginning of this conversation, which I thought was interesting, that religion makes you ponder some big concepts.
Yeah, really,
at a very young age.
Oh, anyway, no, I'm sorry. This is the story I wanted to tell you. So Pete, we were drinking in high school.
Who's Pete?
This is the story that I derailed myself on.
Okay. Then I want to get back to how it's not good to even think about these concepts at such a young age. It'll mess you up.
We will. Pete. So we were great friends in high school. We went to college together. We were both having a great time, really having a lot of fun. And one weekend he went back to my hometown, and he apparently met up with this chick, and he really liked her. And then he did this religious thing, and he said that he went to a soda, and he asked God. He went to a soda machine, and he asked God to give him a non-caffeine, soda. And then an orange crush fell out of the machine without him putting money in it. Well, this is his miracle. Okay?
Uh-huh.
He comes back. He's totally different. 180 change in the man. He ends up moving out like in 3 months because I'm like, you got to get out of the dorm room. I mean, I felt like I was in prison with a bunkmate that had just gone crazy.
Does he love that R.E.M. song, Orange Crush?
I don't know if he is allowed to listen to R.E.M., quite honestly. He went so far off the rails. Once you catch fire, once you do become born again, and it's like brand new. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are some of the most obnoxious people on the face of the planet.
Yeah.
So he lost his mind. And that was a situation where our friendship was never again.
Right.
Right.
Just totally changed.
And so with my parents losing their parents and losing their children, with him losing, my friendship, obviously he has, now he's got kids, and this is 15 years ago now at this point. But there is something that just, it immediately slices off certain relationships, cauterizes the wound, and then the person just moves on, much like any other addiction. So that's the story about evangelicalism and religion, and how it just completely everything from you being the old you to you being born again. The old you is completely gone, and that is your friends as well.
Right, your relationships all
which changed. which is something that is my feelings were really hurt by that. I remember my feelings being very hurt by that because, like you were talking about earlier with religious judgment, then all of a sudden I'm drinking a beer and he's looking at me as if I'm doing something terribly unpleasing to Mother Mary.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, what happened? We were literally 72 hours ago you were sitting with me drinking a beer. We were playing John Madden football. I don't know what happened to you.
And that's just a friend of yours, but yeah. It hurts on a much deeper level when it comes from your own flesh and blood, like your parents.
Sure. So you were saying now you don't want to be pondering life and death at a young age?
Well, I don't think it's good for children. Children are just dealing with life and being alive and what their hands are and what's going on.
Oh, I don't know if that's true, though. I think I always dive in the deep end, you know, much like Molly Shannon's character in the television, in the movie Superstar, her character that she made famous on SNL. Just jump in the deep end. I don't think that there are many, other than, you know, sexual things. Children are very, very smart. And when it comes to life and death, that is just so ingrained in human beings. And of course, sexual things, as well. I mean, everyone starts humping pillows at like six or something, but you know.
But they don't know what it means. Like the brain is scientifically a muscle, you know,
the
brain has to develop and grow, not only be used like a muscle would lift weights, but the brain has to just have experience and just time. It just needs
but at
time.
The same time, you know, I'm 34 years old now. I'm really happy I started thinking about these things super young so I can kind of go through my life and not have angst into my 50s.
Right, but think about how you were in your 20s and how you look back on it now like, oh, I was such an idiot. I thought I knew everything. You know, it's very common. Like in your 20s, you have a lot of angst. You think you know everything. Then
right.
You get in your 30s, you're like, oh, I kind of didn't know everything then. And then you kind of start to think you do know everything, and then it's probably just...
Oh, it's impossible to know everything. I mean, if you think you know everything, I mean, the wonderful thing about learning things is the more you learn, the more you know nothing. You know, the more you know that you know nothing, because there's so much to learn,
right?
Which is such an exciting thing.
And you've just kind of revealed that you're not a religious person because you have this open mind and sense of wonder about things.
But again, that is something that did start from religion. I mean... first of all, being a 6-year-old and, you know, being around adults who are like, Jesus is real, all these stories are very fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's straight out of the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the Garden of Eden, snakes, brothers killing each other. I mean,
an ark
the violence
is
through the
roof.
Oh my God. Yeah, a ship with a bunch of animals and this dude can talk to him?
Right. How did he build a boat so big it could hold an elephant, a camel, a giraffe?
Right.
It's amazing.
And then the sex, how does this work? You know, but you know what you start doing?
Elephant mate with the giraffe? How did that work?
I do 4 podcasts for a reason. I've always asked questions and I love asking questions. That's how I learn. Mm-hmm. I read a lot of news, but I don't read a lot of books. And I listen to audiobooks and I watch a lot of Charlie Rose and I watch a lot. I digest a lot of information, but I love asking questions. That's my favorite way to learn. You read the books. I'll mine you for the material I need. You know,
that's cool. I have a bit I'm working on about how New Yorkers are all kind of attention starved because they never ask people questions.
Yeah, asking questions is wonderful.
And
that's one of the things that you started doing immediately with religion because there's a lot of questions. And then you get, you know, kind of BS answers. And then you have to sort of, you know, go into your own mind and figure it out. But I do understand what you're saying. It made life very, very difficult.
Overly complex for a child.
But in hindsight, almost like military training, almost like, you know, if you're going to become a Marine or something, it's hell. But then at the end of the day, you're able to survive a battle in Fallujah, you know? So it helps, you know, but at the time
is
when you're
carrying... Is that what life is about, surviving battles in Fallujah?
It is, yeah. It's the definition of what life is about.
What is life?
Surviving battles in Fallujah. That's a good way to do it.
But
a good way to maintain it.
Like there's some concepts you could see when you talk to a kid, if you put this heavy concept on them, their brain just goes empty. They're just like, I can't even understand it.
Well, it's a dim kid. It's a dim kid. It is. That's adult. You know, that's a person who's going to be, you know, if your brain is a vessel that has nothing in it and has, if the person has no desire to put anything in it, then they're going to fall to the politician that says the sweetest things. They're going to maybe vote for Bernie Sanders because he talks about distribution of wealth and how everyone needs free college and how everyone should have, you know,
well, it's
full tank of gas and a perfect amount of kids, whatever sort of utopian-esque world Bernie Sanders is selling. People who, you know, just love the words and love the ideas, regardless of looking through the ramifications and the, what does that look like? What would that world be? You know, they're gonna go to somebody like that. And then, of course, the inverse would be Donald Trump. So those people are just dim. I mean, and those people might be ones, I know for a fact there are evangelical kids that I grew up with who are still evangelical because they're not smart.
Well, like if you ask this question to a six-year-old, you say, if a tree falls in the woods and no one's there to hear it, did the tree fall? They might not even understand the question. But if you ask it to a 60-year-old, they'll very confidently tell you what they think. Because I think with a brain, when it's that young, it just doesn't understand.
I don't know, concepts. Man. I mean, there's a reason. I believe Bill Cosby used to host Kids Say the Darndest Things? Was that the cause?
I don't know.
But there's a reason that children are constantly mined for comedic content. They have ideas.
Oh, yeah.
Who knows? I wish I was a six-year-old so I could answer that question properly.
Well, they're so uninhibited.
Because they would probably say something, you know, regarding a tree talking, or maybe they reference some, maybe a Lord of the Rings type thing, mm-hmm. or, you know, Harry Potter or whatever the hell it is. So kids tend to do, I used to work at a YMCA taking, for the summers when I was in college, mm-hmm. and kids have ideas. They have answers to any question.
Yeah.
And they're very, very,
but unique. They might involve unicorns and floating carpets and,
or they're just very
stars.
Rational too. Sometimes. And you're just like, oh my God, you're a sociopath.
Right.
You know, it depends.
Do you think, because I think religion was created for a reason. I think religion was created because there was a very chaotic world and people needed morals and people weren't getting morals anywhere. And now I think we've evolved to a point where we just grow up with morals. I don't know how or why, but we just intuitively know murdering someone is wrong. You know, you kind of know the golden rule.
I mean,
which ironically
I don't know if that's
biblical,
true.
But
I don't think that that's true. I mean, morals.
You think we need religion for morals?
No, I don't think we need religion for morals. We might need prisons and law.
Exactly. The laws are the morals now.
Yeah. And most of the laws are based off of religion. I mean, you know, we just recently got the Ten Commandments out of courts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's a battle that happened in our lifetime, which is insane, talking about separation of church and state.
Right.
So I don't know if, I mean, I think in a lot of ways, atheism is a religion. I mean, it depends on what morality is something that is just, that is something that has to be taught at a young age, but I don't.
But can it be taught independently of religion?
Yeah. I mean, of course, there's a lot of great kids who grow up with that in non-religious homes who have an amazing philosophy towards life, but there is always something that it's attached to. You can't just make these things up out of nowhere. So, because if somebody says, why can't I? You know, you can't murder, and a kid's just like, why not? I mean, you have to have a reason.
Because you'll go to jail, and you'll spend your life in solitary confinement, or you'll be murdered in the electric chair.
Yeah, that could work.
That might work.
Yeah, that's a nightmare. God, I watch so much Lockup on MSNBC. No, maybe religion's needed or not needed. It just doesn't matter. It'll always be here in whatever form that it is. It's just how you brand it. So
yeah, did they not have prisons back when religion was created?
I mean, they had
maybe they didn't. They couldn't hold people in caves or wherever we were living.
I think they had prisons. I think they were killing quite a few people.
Oh, they'd probably just kill you with the guillotine, right?
I mean, you know, we're living in a time now where it's awful. Our prison system is one of the worst situations on the face of the planet. So
But the more people that are locked up, the cheaper the rents will be. Is what's good.
That's not true. What is it? I think we spend roughly $78,000 a year on each prisoner.
Mm.
Some states it's upwards of like $150,000. I think if you're in solitary, it's around like $200,000 a year to keep you there.
So it's cheaper if someone's in solitary?
It's more expensive.
More expensive. I feel like solitary confinement is torture.
Well, the Quakers started it and they stopped it because it was torture. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we keep it going. The prison industrial complex is terrible, but that's a whole other conversation.
Have you ever spent long amounts of time either alone or in a foreign land where you couldn't understand the language?
A little bit.
You start to go insane.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Without because we're nothing without other people to bounce ourselves off of. So in solitary confinement, you would just lose all sense of who you are.
Well, that's where you find religion.
When there's nothing else.
You know,
else.
That's then you find your personal Jesus or Muhammad or whatever the hell.
Well,
or Tom Cruise, whoever the hell you want to worship.
That's exactly my point. It's your personal Jesus. And if it's your personal thing, that's fine. It doesn't affect me. I have nothing to do with it. That's your personal thing. Great. If it works for you, wonderful. But when you start pushing it on me by either proselytizing or imposing your values on me, that's where you're out of line.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just everyone. Yeah, I agree. Evangelicalism is not my... Evangelizing is not one of my favorite things. And of course, the real problem with it isn't so much in this country. It is in places when it comes to the evangelical religion. The problem isn't so much in this country. It is in places like Haiti. It is in places like Nigeria. It is in more developing worlds where these focus on the family types, the James Dobson types, really actually have a foothold in the political systems there, and they are leading to the deaths of thousands and thousands and thousands of gays and other people who are deemed lesser than in the eyes of God. So in this country, we're actually fairly secular. If you go into where evangelicals really have some power into those more developing nations, that's where their brutality can really be seen. And that's where it really becomes a nefarious religion and dangerous. And of course, in the Middle East, you can see what religion does to those people. Very, very similar, as a matter of fact.
Well, the Middle East, I mean, the Middle Easterners, it's just like, I don't even understand from square one. But the Haitians, why are they so anti-gay? Where does that come from?
I don't know exactly where it comes from. But if you want to, I do a great podcast called Abe Lincoln's Top Hat. If you want to understand the Middle East, listen to the episode I did with Saman Arbabi. He's one of my greatest friends. Mm-hmm. And he is a... former international war journalist. So he was in Afghanistan and Beirut and all around from 2004 to 2009. So check out those episodes on Abe Lincoln's Top Hat on Cave Comedy Radio.
Wow, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's great. I know a lot about that, but that's a whole other thing.
Yeah. Now, you have you been to therapy? I mean, you see...
No, I've never been to therapy.
You've never seen a therapist?
No, I would never go to therapy.
You'd never go to therapy?
I would never go to therapy.
You're anti-therapy.
I'm not anti-therapy. Therapy is not for me because I went to therapy when I... No, that's... Okay, so... So I was forced to go to therapy when I was like 12, 13, 14.
By your parents?
The school, whatever. Somebody wanted
the
me.
Catholic
maybe, maybe
school.
Maybe the courts. I have no idea.
Wait, no. And they sent you there for a reason. Something was going on. They either caught you drinking or smoking or thought you might be gay or something.
No, I was very rambunctious and I was extremely... I had a lot of thoughts in my head, and I expressed them.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't acting up. I think I was acting appropriately.
Playing the smart guy.
Well, I don't know if I was smart, but I definitely wasn't the easiest student, I don't think.
Yeah.
And I certainly wasn't the best kid.
I was sent to one as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we did some vandalism.
You know what I found out from mine? When you see a therapist when you're under 18... They tell your parents everything you say.
Oh my God! So I don't know what I said.
Did that happen to you?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I'm sure my parents must have been terrified. Mm-hmm. They thought that was... They brought home Damien from The Omen.
my guy told me what you say in here is between us, and then I'm telling him all my thoughts. Then I find out that he told my mom everything.
He's a snitch.
Total snitch. I hate that guy.
I hate him too. Yeah, I actually had to go to quite a few therapists. That's where I got diagnosed with ADHD and social anxiety disorder and things like that.
These are school therapists.
No, these were like, you know, at the doctor's office.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, but you know.
At what age was this that you were sent to these?
12, 13, 14. Okay. But I always knew that they were going to be telling my parents. I was never open with these people. Mm-hmm. At no point did I... ever reveal who I was to them.
Right.
You're
smarter than I was.
Well, I mean, you can't. I mean, they're a bunch of morons. I mean, who are these people? You know, they weren't smart enough to get out of this situation. You know, I really had no respect for them.
Right.
And I just remember one woman at the end of it, I have no idea what I said. At the end of the hour, she was just bawling, and then she was like, I'll never see him again. I have no idea what... I probably just said a bunch of accurate things about what a failure she was. And
to the therapist?
I guess so. I have no idea what I literally have no clue.
You just totally tore her down?
I guess. I don't know. I have no idea. My parents just said she was crying, and she said she didn't want to see you anymore. And then they said, what'd you say? And I said, I don't remember.
That's awesome.
I really don't remember, which is really bizarre. But yeah, then I had a couple of other therapists, but I always found them to be, I always thought they were just kind of going through the motions and providing information that I already knew and then trying to...
Well, it sounds like...
Yeah, they were just bad. They were stupid.
It sounds like opposite of what a therapist should be, because you should feel like a therapist is your ally no matter what. And you kind of seeing them as your enemy at that age.
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, why would they be an ally? There is no ally. If you are having a hard time and you are young, you know, this whole campaign, it gets better. It does not get better. You get better. You know, the world stays the exact same. Nothing is changing. But you get better. You know, so it doesn't.
Well, but you do. And it is so, your life.
It's your life. Yeah. You know? So if you're listening and you're young and you're, you know, going through and you know, you do have to have a certain, again, going back to having to confront life and death issues at the age of 6, by the time I was 12, I was already like halfway through college. You know, if you go for 12 years, I guess. So I was already. Oh,
and you're fearing hell. You're probably like dealing with.
No,
all this.
I already knew that was nonsense. I mean, I
you didn't believe in it.
No, I started drinking whiskey at 12 alone. Uh-huh. You know, I wasn't concerned about it. I wasn't concerned about any of that stuff. I thought that was for the birds. I really loved comedy and I loved, you know, and I loved human interaction and figuring out how to get people to like me. But then I was going through such hell.
Would you say comedy is your therapy?
Comedy is not therapy. Comedy is the reason people go to therapy. That is a misconception that comedy is therapy, in my personal opinion. Maybe it is for some people. Podcasts are therapy in a way. And, you know, just expressing yourself is therapy.
Right.
That's it. So if you can express yourself perfectly on stage, then I guess that can be therapy. But then at the same time, usually when you go to the therapist office, you don't get, you know, booed out of the room. So not that I get booed out of the room.
How they just start crying.
Yeah, exactly. Never see so what again. Happened?
I quit being a therapist. So
she did.
So two questions. How do you work all this stuff out? I mean, you got to find your release some way.
Yeah, just the podcast. And I mean, I've been.
Yeah, is that why you have four podcasts?
Yeah, I've had four podcasts. I've had three for 5 years and one for 1 year. And yeah, that's it. Just express yourself, constantly express yourself. And and you can get it out. You just have to. You know, find the way, whatever is best for you. You know, I do like to write, but, I just don't, you know, so if you're a writer, that's a great way to do it. If you like to go on stage and perform theater, you can do that. I really wanted to be an actor. I'm 6'7" and I didn't realize that made that career an impossible, venture. Maybe if I get famous, I can, you know, be in some things.
Get yourself shortened by a doctor.
Yeah. Get myself shrunken down by some sort of Willy Wonka-esque doctor. So yeah, whatever it is, that's the best. You just have to find a release for it. And I think there's a problem now. That's why we have all these shootings and things like that. It's not so much because of guns. It's because people just sit there and they get so fumed over their phones and on their computers. And they get so full of rage, you know, digesting all the hate that drives the internet. And then they go out, you know, and they do, acts of atrocity.
Mental
health problems. Or it is, well, obviously they're not mentally healthy people. But you know, they just get so full of rage and they can't figure out an outlet because either they're not creative or they also know that if you want to get the quickest way to get from A to the cover of the Rolling Stones is to go blow up a fucking marathon. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
But you'll be in solitary and you can't enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, you're still famous, you know, and that's what you want. I mean, a lot of these people have a death wish anyway.
But if you're famous and you never see yourself on the magazines, are you really famous?
That's a question you got to ask a 60-year-old. Mm-hmm. That is a good question, actually. Are you famous if you don't know that you're famous?
Right. Yeah.
Don't think you are.
Yeah. That's part of the whole mental health problem, I think, is that the social media is really making people very unhappy. Because everyone wants to be famous. They want to get the likes, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And it's making a lot of people miserable.
Yeah. A lot of that. Yeah. For sure. Social media is a very addictive drug. Mm-hmm. I had a great podcast. I listened to the Ben Kissel show. I had a great episode this week with John DeVore, who does a lot of stuff with social media. He's a very successful social media fella, and we had a good discussion about that.
So do you have a therapeutic practice besides the podcasts, or is that just how you get your release?
No, I don't. I don't do anything therapeutic. No?
You ever hear of that book, The Artist's Way, and the Morning Pages, and that whole thing?
No, that's the one with a finger pointing at you
on the cover.
Yeah,
I don't remember the cover. Okay. But the cool concept that I got from it was when you wake up to just write and don't criticize or be critical of what you're writing. Just free flow write. You don't even have to read it back. But if you do read it back, it's amazing what comes out. Because there's us, and then there's like an objective us.
Right, right.
You know, there's the conscious mind, subconscious mind. But then there's something else going on. You know, we don't really know ourselves, and we're surprised by what comes out often. And I think that's why a therapist is beneficial for everybody, because they're trained and they see patterns in the human mind, and they can kind of like help you guide your way to figure this stuff out. Not that you need it. I'm not saying that. But
no, I listen to myself on a regular basis. I'm fairly well acquainted with myself. But I do understand what you're saying, and I think it makes a lot of sense.
Right, to have a professional that's seen not only your brain.
I don't know about a professional. I mean, what are these therapists?
Well, it's a soft science. It's relatively new, psychiatry and psychology. Yeah. But, you know, you do start to see patterns. You date. Don't you see patterns in women or patterns in the stuff that happens, whether it's coming from you or whether it's coming from them or the women that you're attracting, whatever. These psychologists, whatever.
Right.
They see these patterns.
Yeah, good.
So they're supposed to be. That's why they're paid.
A lot of money, yeah.
Be one step ahead.
Well, they're all going through divorces.
Then there's that. There's this definitely a certain person that's
attracted
to.
They're all slamming the Dumore down there in the desk, smoking a bunch of weed.
Well, you got to be a little. You got to have psychological issues to be attracted to psychology.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. You got to try to cure yourself first.
Right, but don't you want a mechanic that's in love with cars?
That's a good point. Sure. Yes, I think that's a good idea. But no, I think therapy can be good for some people. It's not a personal. Thing for me. I like to ask questions. I don't like to talk, you know, so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, I would not respect their answers. It's very rare that a person gives an answer about me that I would agree with. Very, very rare. So, you know, it is what it is.
What do you mean an answer about you? Like if you ask the question about you and they evaluate you, you mean?
Yeah. Very rarely is the evaluation correct.
Uh-huh.
Almost, it's never been correct, actually. So I don't have any confidence in that. I think I would be able to answer the question better. So any questions I have about myself, I can ask myself and I'll answer it.
I could see your future girlfriend, Rose, just fuming in her face right now.
Yeah, good.
She'd be like, I know you better than you know yourself.
No, they don't know anything. That's possible.
I could already tell what kind of fights you've had with past girlfriends.
No, I don't think I've ever had one.
A past girlfriend or a fight?
What do you mean? Let's see. Either of them.
Really? What's your longest relationship?
My longest relationship, I believe, was 2.5 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it was a very nice gal, and we're still good friends today. So I think that's wonderful.
That says a lot about a person when they're friends.
I'm friends with all of my ex-girlfriends.
You are?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Why? Yeah. Why? What happened? You think you'll get back together?
No, I don't think so. I don't know what I'm going to do with that. But we'll figure it out.
Yeah,
I want money.
You want money,
and then I'll be able to deal with all that. Mm-hmm. I'm celibate. I am.
Until you make your first six-figure check.
Yeah. I need money. You need money. Otherwise, you never know. You never know who you can get. Right?
Jesus didn't have much money.
Jesus actually did have quite a bit of money. That's myth.
Really? What? Why was he wandering around with a bunch of guys not wearing shoes?
They had sandals. Sandals were very good. They were the Nikes of the time.
Were they really?
Oh, that's... Jesus came for money. All that's nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
If he was real,
yeah.
Judging by what he wore, historians believe Jesus was loaded. Everyone who is, most people that are successful due to nepotism. It's very difficult to break through when you come from nothing. So that is something good to learn. And it certainly applies to the people who have become the figureheads of the most famous religions in the world.
Now, I will argue that it's difficult to break through when you don't come from money. I think it's more of a mindset. I mean, it's both.
No, it is not. No, you can have all the mindset that you want. if you have money, if you come from people who are connected into the industry that you want to go into, life is 1,000 times easier, and you get to skip like 15 years of hard work. But the hard work makes you a better person. So I wouldn't trade that for anybody. And it's certainly I'm not jealous. Or anything.
Oh, I saw this firsthand. I used to live in Los Angeles, and I was working for this woman. She was married to Rod Stewart's guitar player. Blah blah blah. Lived in the Hollywood Hills, and she had kids, and the roster, like the book of the elementary school, was sitting on my desk. So yeah. I opened it up and I'm like, Francis Bean Cobain, name I knew from Hollywood.
Right.
I'm like, they're all going to school together. This is how it happens.
Yeah, of course.
They grow up together and then they put themselves in each other's movies. And
yeah, I mean, there's nothing, it's not that difficult to understand. You know, there is no global conspiracy. It is just, these are friends.
Right.
And you grow up in the economic class that you grow up in. And, you know, I think at this point, I am the most successful person from my high school. So you can, that tells you where I grew up.
I do think some of it is mindset. Cause when you grow up with, like, you don't even know anything bigger or better than your small town, your mind doesn't even go there. You just can't even fathom, like, oh, I could be head of a huge multinational.
Well, that's lack of creativity. You know, I mean, I don't know. I can't sympathize too much for the people who don't have large dreams and hopes, you know. So it is a mindset, but I don't feel any empathy towards the person who grew up in a small town who then says, woe is me, I'm from this small town, and I can never go achieve anything large. I think that is a personal decision that people make, and I have no...
But what if they didn't even know if it was even an option?
Well, then there's... Then they have an ignorance of the mind, and I don't know how to help them. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, anyone can do anything. You just have to go do it. So many people are scared of offending somebody, or you know, scared of leaving their parents, or scared of whatever it might be.
Well, I'll put it on me. So I'll put the example on me. When I was in middle school and high school, I was big time class clown. I would make jokes. Even the teacher would laugh, but I would get into a lot of trouble.
Right, you got to.
And people would be like, oh, you're so funny. You have an interesting way that you speak. A couple people told me, and I was like, oh, that's interesting that I'm being pointed out. But then a friend was like, oh, let's play music. We could be rock stars. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Let's do that. So I spent many years playing music. Now, if someone would have just said to me, hey, you're funny and you talk in an interesting way, you should be a stand-up comic. If one person would have said that to me, I would have been like, what? I can be a stand-up comic? That's a thing? And I would have done it, but the thought never even crossed my mind. That would have changed my whole trajectory.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you have to look at the best way. I mean, at that point, you wanted to join a band and be in a band because you thought that was going to be the quickest way to success, right?
Yeah, and that's
so it was a smart decision.
No, because right? The music industry is horrible.
It's horrible, yes.
way worse than comedy.
It is... It doesn't even exist. I mean, it's the wild, wild west out there.
Exactly.
But no, I mean, at the same time, I think you made the right decision for you at the moment, right? Because you knew how to play music. You knew this other person who knew how to play music, and you guys got a thing together. And I mean, that's just trial and error. It wasn't like you didn't have the desire for success. I am talking about people who don't have the desire to do anything.
Uh-huh.
Who, you know, you didn't have. Okay, so maybe you chose the wrong outlet to begin with. We've all, you know, I was a theater major for 2 years. I mean, that's not going anywhere before I started doing stand-up. And then with stand-up, which I really love doing, and I'm excited to, you know, continue doing it, but I fell in love with podcasts through stand-up, you know?
Right.
And so you...
But you found out that it was there.
Yeah, you just evolve with, you know, different doors open the more that you do things. So I'm talking about people who are just like, I can't do it because I'm from Neenah, Wisconsin. And, you know, we make manhole covers here. We don't do comedy.
But
if
that's all you know.
But this is, yeah, but that's a personal choice. I mean, I don't have sympathy for anyone who doesn't, those are also the people who become internet trolls. You know, the people who just demonize and criticize and cut down people who are trying to do things with their lives.
But to bring it back to politics for 1 second, I think that's kind of the problem with the Middle East and ISIS and all this stuff is that they're not watching, they don't know what else is out there. They don't see that there's other lives, that there's other things they could be doing. There's no hope there. They grew up with no plumbing, everything's, there's no schools, there's no hope. And then They're like, oh, I can join this community of terrorists.
Of course.
And give meaning to my life.
And that's the religion. That's what it is.
That's the religion. Exactly.
Yeah, it's the meaning. It's giving the meaning to your life. So, yeah.
That's why I kind of thought the information age would kind of equalize the earth a lot quicker than it has been so far. Because, like, everyone could get on the internet. Are the kids in ISIS not going on YouTube and seeing how awesome life can be?
Going on YouTube and seeing how awesome it can be if you join ISIS.
I don't think they're getting the full internet access there. I think they block it and they block a lot of websites, and maybe they just don't even know that they can be a stand-up comic. They don't have to shoot people. They can make people laugh.
But they can't be a stand-up comic. I mean, there is no institution for it. I'm sure there's kids growing up in Syria right now who are aspiring to be something that will give them a validation and things like that. I don't know what that might be.
What do I do? Do I join ISIS? Do I make people laugh and do stand-up comedy?
Well, where's the club? I mean, you gotta have a club. You have to have the infrastructure first.
And then
the arts can exist. That's the other thing. You know, a lot of liberals go into the arts. Liberals don't realize that you need the conservative to build a business first. And then so it all comes together. Everyone is together. We all need one another in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. You need the business person to
you just need the club. Yeah, you need the stage. You need a microphone. You need a distributor. You need a television network to be performing on. You know,
or do you?
You definitely do. Otherwise, there is no validation. If a comedian tells a joke and no one's there, did he tell a joke? You know.
Well, that's why I think we're entering weird times as artists, because we have the technology to eliminate all the distribution systems. We can go direct to the people.
Yeah.
But we're not great marketers.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I definitely am not the best marketer of all time. I would like to get better with it. But that's something you can learn, you know, for sure.
Well, that's how the whole...
There's more avenues now than ever before. So you just have to find the one that works for you and hit it hard.
Exactly. And I think you are on your way. You looked really good on the news. Like, you belong on those news stations. Not only Fox.
I know. NBC. I mean, if MSNBC wants to call, I'd love to argue with them, too.
See, when I watched those Fox clips of you, I was like, oh my God, Ben's like Bob Roberts. He's so conservative.
Oh, yeah.
I got that, but I just watched your reel. I didn't see like whole segments, but I was under the impression that you were extremely conservative.
From those clips?
Yeah.
Huh. I think the Fox brand tends to do that too.
Yeah, you just kind of assume everybody is. Yeah.
And my hair, the way they do my hair, it's very conservative.
No, but you look like you belong there. It's good.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I am not particularly conservative. I'm conservative on some things, not on others.
You're critical of all.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm getting that. You don't like politicians and you don't like therapists.
I love politicians. I don't like therapists. I do love politicians. I'm a huge fan of politicians and entertainers in general.
And you're more tolerant of religious people than religious people are tolerant of us.
Some, yes. This is how we're better. This is why you're better than them.
And that's why we shouldn't draw false equivalencies.
I don't even know what the word means. Thank you so much for having me, Gary.
Thanks for doing it.
That was fun.
I tried to wrap it up there and real nice. And
you did. You did a great job.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you got a big future ahead of you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to Quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.